Welcome back to our Tanakh Study Center series on Sefer Yirmiyahu. Today we're studying Perek Nun Bet, chapter 52, the last chapter of Sefer Yirmiyahu. And our series has been in conjunction with the OU and its Nachyomi project and have been sponsored with the help of the Tzipras Foundation. As we mentioned in the end of yesterday's shir, chapter 51 could serve as a fitting ending for the book of Yirmiyahu, as its last words are Ad Hena Divrei Yirmiyahu, up until this point are the words of Yirmiyahu. We also explain there's no connection between the Nevuah in chapter 51 to what happens in chapter 52. Also, as I'm sure you've noticed, chapter 52 appears to be almost identical with the last chapter of Sefer Melachim, as it describes how Yerushalayim was captured and destroyed by the Babylonians, how Tzidkiyahu tried to run away and he was caught, and ends on a rather positive note about how King Jehoiachin was taken out of jail and promoted to a rather important position when King Evil-Merodach took over for Nebuchadnezzar several decades later. This leads many commentators to suggest that the purpose of the last chapter is to come to show that indeed Yirmiyahu's nevuot came true. However, in our opening shiurim, and throughout our series in Sefer Yirmiyahu, our approach has been to contend quite the opposite, that the job of the Navi is not primarily to predict what will happen, but rather to shape what will happen. And before we continue with our detailed study of chapter 52, I'd like to make one general observation about what we can learn from Sefer Yirmiyahu, especially in regard to our own time period. Before we study the last chapter, one key point which I think requires reinforcement. Return to Perek 18, to Perek Yudchet, Pasukhe. Vayidbar Adonai Elai Lemor, ha-hayotzer hazeh lo ochal lasot lechem beit Yisrael num Adonai. Can I, God, not be like that potter who's able to change the shape of that clay into a different piece of pottery? Just like clay is in the hand of the potter, so are you in my hands, the house of Israel. And then he explains in Pasuk Vav. In one moment I may speak about the future of a nation or a kingdom that will be destroyed and taken apart and wiped out. But should that nation change its ways and repent from its evil, then God says, if that nation repents and changes its ways, then God will change his mind about the evil that he thought to do to it. And on the opposite, in Pasuk Tet, in one moment I'll talk about a nation that's going to grow and will be planted and prosper. Should that nation sin and do evil in my eyes, not to listen to God, God can change his mind about that good. In my opinion, these psukim prove our contention that the job of the Navi is not to prove that these events will happen, but these events may happen if the people don't follow God properly, or if the people do follow God properly. And hence, the job of the Navi is to shape history. If that's the case, what's the point of the predictions? The point of the predictions is to make the people aware in hope that they'll do proper repentance in order that those predictions will not happen. And then secondly, which is more important for today's share, that when those events do take place, the people will come back and reflect and realize that Navi was right, not in order to clap for that Navi and say what a great prophet he was, he predicted the events precisely, but rather to internalize his message and understand why was it that that evil took place and what needs to be done in order for redemption to take place. Therefore, if Sefer Yirmiyahu is going to end with the story of how Yerushalayim was indeed destroyed, as Yirmiyahu predicted, and the fate of Tzidkiyahu as Yirmiyahu predicted, it's not simply to come and pat Yirmiyahu on the back and say, look, you were right. Rather, it's in order that the reader of Sefer Yirmiyahu can learn a lesson from Yirmiyahu's message of the book, not only that his prediction of the events will come true, but also of the need of Am Yisrael to follow God properly to make sure that the nevuot of Yeshua of salvation will indeed come true, and on the opposite, to make sure that we don't repeat the sins of the first temple period. What makes Yirmiyahu so great is not simply how he predicted the fall of Yerushalayim, but his contention that even though Am Yisrael will be exiled from the land, and even though Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash will be destroyed, that the people of Israel should not interpret those events as though God had left them, but rather to understand that they're going into exile for the purpose of rehabilitation, and the very fact that Am Yisrael indeed survived their exile, not only the exile after the first temple, but even the exile after the destruction of the second temple, in many ways, it's in the Zchut of Yirmiyahu, his message, and the fact that Chazal decided to include his book and his works in the Kitvei HaKodesh. So with that in mind, let's begin our study of chapter 52. Ben 21 shana Tzidkiyahu b'mocho, v'11 shana malach v'yushalayim, v'shem imo chamutal bat Yirmiyahu milivna. We return to the beginning of the reign of Tzidkiyahu. He was 21 years old when he became king. He reigned for 11 years, and his mother's name was Chamutal, the daughter of Yirmiyo from the city of Livna, not to be confused with our Yirmiyo, the Navi from the city of Anatot. This was Chamutal, the daughter of a different Yirmiyo from the city of Livna. Ki al af Adonai hayta b'Yerushalayim v'Yehuda, ad hashlicho otam mi'apanav. God's anger was kindled against Yehuda and Yerushalayim to the point that he sent them away from his face, meaning he sent them away from the land of Israel. And then we summarize the main mistake that Tzidkiyahu made by Imrod Tzidkiyahu b'melech Bavel. Tzidkiyahu rebelled against Bavel. Recall in our earlier study that even though Nebuchadnezzar first came and took over Yerushalayim after the 11th year of Jehoiakim, as soon as Jehoiakim came into power, the Beit HaMikdash did not have to be destroyed. The remainder of the people did not have to go into exile. Had Tzidkiyahu simply accepted Babylonian sovereignty and kept his commitment to the treaty with Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Bavel. As we saw in approximately the 5th year of his reign, he rebelled against Bavel. That began a chain of events that brought back Nebuzaradan, who was in charge of the army, who finally put a siege around Yerushalayim and destroyed the city, the story which we're going to read now in the next several psukim. Pasuk Dalet. Vahi b'shana ha-tshi'it l'mocho, in the 9th year of the reign of Tzidkiyahu, b'chodesh ha-siri b'asod ha-chodesh, what we call Asar b'tevet, ba Nebuchadrezzar melech Bavel, hu v'chol chelo al Yerushalayim, v'echanu alam. Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Bavel, and his entire army came and encamped on Yerushalayim. V'yipnu aleha dayek misaviv, they set up a siege around the walls of Yerushalayim. V'tavo ha-ir b'matzor, the city was under siege, ad ashtei esrei shana l'melech Tzidkiyahu, until the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu, we'll see, until the 4th month. Therefore, the city was under siege for about a year and a half. The last 3 months of year 9, all 12 months of year 10, and the first 4 months of year 11. Pasuk Vav, B'chodesh ha-revi, batisha l'chodesh, in the 4th month, on the 9th of that month, in the 11th year, Ve'echezak harab ba'ir, the famine on the city became very strong, meaning there was no food left. B'lo haya lechem la'ma'aretz, the people had nothing left to eat, and therefore they could no longer remain under siege. But the wall was broken through. V'chol anshei ha-melchama yivruchu, all the men of war ran away. V'yitzu me'ha'ir laila, derech shar bein ha-chomotayim, asher al-gan ha-melech, v'chazdim al ha'ir saviv, v'yichu derech ha-arava. So all the army men, or at least most of them it seems, ran away from the city, and they tried to get around the Babylonian siege by sneaking out a gate between the two walls of the city, most likely somewhere near the Shiloach pole in the lower part of Yir David, in the area which nowadays as well is called Gan HaMelech. And the Kazdim had surrounded the city at that time. Nonetheless, the army men and the king were able to get by. Bayechud derech Arava, and they went, most likely, the way of Male Dumim, down to the Jordan Valley, known here as the Arava. As I'm sure you noticed, here it appears to be that the wall of the city was broken, not on the 17th of Tammuz, but rather on the 9th of Tammuz. The Gemara in Tanit talks about that. One suggestion is that in the second temple it was on the 17th of Tammuz. However, based on Perichet in Sefer Zechariah, which he talks about the 4 fast days, calling them Tzom HaRevi'i v'Tzom HaChamishi, Tzom HaShvi'i v'Tzom HaSiri, they're the fast days of the month. Many disasters happen in the 4th month and the 5th month, as Masechet Tanit records. And therefore, Chazal picked a fast day in the 4th month, in the month of Tammuz. Which day did they pick? They picked the most meaningful day, the 17th of Tammuz, because that was not only the day that the wall was broken, but more important, the day that Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchot and the sin of Chet HaEgel. And therefore, which specific day in the month Chazal picked to mark the fast could be based on other events, but once we pick that day, we also include with that the breaking through of the city that happened in the 9th of the month during the time of the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. Let's see now what happens to Tzidkiyahu. Pasachet. The Kazdim chased the king. They catch him in Yericho. What's interesting here, all the men of the army who had run away with the king, everyone started running away to different places. If you know the terrain between Yerushalayim and Yericho, there's no shortage of caves and valleys to run away and hide in the area of HaMelech. Simply take a look at the area of Qumran and the caves there. The same thing that happened towards the end of the second temple period. The people ran away from Yerushalayim and hid out in the Dead Sea area. V'yitpesu et ha-melech, but they caught the king. V'yalu oto ha-melech Bavel rivlata be'eretz Hamat. They took the king who they caught to Nebuchadnezzar, who in the meantime was in the main army camp in the city of Rivla, near the area of Hamat, probably not too far from the city of Hamat today. V'yidaber ito mishpatim, he spoke to him judgment, meaning he was very angry at Tzidkiyahu for breaking his covenant, because when Tzidkiyahu was made king by Nebuchadnezzar, it was on the condition that he would be subservient to Bavel and not rebel. As we saw in Sefer Yirmiyahu and Sefer Melachim, and more detailed in chapter 16 and 17 of Sefer Yechezkel, Tzidkiyahu broke that treaty, And that's why the king is so angry with him. Vayishchat melech bavel b'nei tzidkiyahu le'inav, as punishment, before poking out his eyes, King Nebuchadnezzar takes all the children of Tzidkiyahu and he butchers them in front of his own eyes. Vegam et kol sarei Yehuda shechat b'rivlata, also the officers of Yehuda who were caught with the king were also shechted in rivla in front of the king. Rashi brings down that these sarim, these ministers of Yehuda, they are none other than the Sanhedrin, and they are being punished by the king of Bavel because it was the Sanhedrin who gave Tzidkiyahu permission to break his oath. Recall that Tzidkiyahu made an oath in God's name not to rebel against Bavel. So how could a king break that oath? According to Chazal, in order to break that oath, he went to the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin okayed the breaking of that oath for the sake of rebelling and achieving independence again. That's very eye-opening if we want to understand the feeling of the religious establishment in the time of the Korban, a topic that we've discussed over and over again, that according to Chazal, the leaders of the Sanhedrin, the leaders of Am Yisrael, the members of the Sanhedrin, were also against Yirmiyahu, and they thought it was okay not only to rebel against Bavel, but even to break an oath in order to rebel. And now Chazal understand that this is their punishment for allowing Tzidkiyahu to break his oath. Pasuk Yud Aleph, after killing all these people in front of his own eyes, that enei Tzidkiyahu iver. Afterwards, the king poked out the eyes of Tzidkiyahu, v'yathreel ben chushtaim, and they chained his feet with copper shackles, v'yidei'u melech Bavel Bavela, and the king of Bavel exiles him to Bavel itself, v'yitnehu beit ha'pkudot ad yomoto, and he put him in beit ha'pkudot, which seems to be some type of a jail, until the day of his death. After telling over what happened to the king and the officers who ran away from Yerushalayim, now we're going to find out what happened to the city itself. In the fifth month, in the month of Av, on the 10th of that month, Hishnat Shas Leshana, the Melech Nebuchadrezzar, Melech Bavel, in year 19 of the reign of Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Bavel, which is the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu, Banevuzaradan, Rav Tabachim, Amad Lifnei Melech Bavel, Yerushalayim. Nebuzaradan, the officer who stood in front of the king of Bavel, recall that Nebuchadnezzar himself is in Rivla now, a little north of Israel, and the officer in charge of the army who's going to actually burn down Yerushalayim will be Nebuzaradan, Rav HaTabachim. He, representing the king of Bavel, now enters Yerushalayim. Vayisrof et Beit Adonai, et Beit HaMelech, this Babylonian army that Nebuzaradan is in charge of, they burn down God's house, the Beit HaMikdash, et Beit HaMelech, the king's house, et Kol Batei Yerushalayim, all the houses of Yerushalayim, et Kol Beit HaGadol, Sarap Eish, and the big house, or any big house, was burnt down in fire. In Chazal, we find an interesting pirush that the Beit HaGadol, Batei Knesiot, or Batei Midrashot, where people studied Torah and davened. Now, if you notice the date here, it seems like Tisha B'Av should be on the 10th of Av, and not on the 9th of Av. The Gemara in Masechet Tanit, Daf Chavtet, discusses this question as well. In the parallel story in the book of Malachim, it says 7th of the month of Av, and here it says the 10th of the month of Av. The answer to Chazal here is first they entered the city on the 7th of Av, they began the actual destruction of the Beit HaMikdash towards the end of the 9th of Av, and the Beit HaMikdash continued and finished burning on the 10th of Av. And that's why our Minhagim of Avelut, of the 9 days, doesn't end with sundown on Tisha B'Av, but rather it continues until noon on the 10th of Av because of this Pasuk in Sefer Yirmiyahu. If we return also to the answer we mentioned before, that Chazal instituted fast days on the 4th month and the 5th month, just like they picked specifically the 17th of Tammuz because of its biblical importance, the day that the Luchot were broken, so it could be for the same reason. Once they had to pick a day in Av, it could have been the 7th, the 8th, the 9th, or the 10th, but they picked the 9th of Av because of the story of Chet HaMragmim, which if you calculate the days, seems to have taken place on the 9th of Av. Let's return now to Pasuk Yod Aled. Bet kol chomot Yerushalayim saviv, natatzu kol chel kazdim, asher et rav tabachim. Not only did the army of the Kazdim burn down the houses of Yerushalayim, they also burnt down the walls of Yerushalayim and took apart its stones. How about the people? Pasuk Tedvav, Umidalot Ha'am, Vetyetar Am Nisharim Ba'er. And the poor people that were originally left the first time they took the city, also the people remaining in the city, Vetanoflim Asher Naflu Amelach Bavel, the people would surrender to the king of Bavel, as Yirmiyahu was suggested, Vetyetar Ha'amon, and also either the remaining people, the parallel Pasuk in Sefer Melachim says Ha'amon, the many, or the masses. Some commentators say Ha'amon may be the craftsman, Miloshen Omanut. But the people remaining in Yerushalayim, who had not either died in battle or were exiled earlier, Hegla Nebuzaradan Rav HaTabachim, most of them were exiled now by Nebuzaradan, the leader of the army. However, he doesn't exile everyone. Umidalot Ha'aretz, from the poor people of the land, Hishir Nebuzaradan Rav HaTabachim, Nebuzaradan left over many of the poor people to stay in the area around Yerushalayim, L'charmim u'le'ogvim, to take care of the vineyards and to till the soil. Basically, the simple people were allowed to stay and work the land to provide the soldiers of Nebuchadrezzar with what to eat and to keep the land alive for the good of the Babylonians. The details of what happened to those people who remained, we saw already in Sefer Yirmiyahu in chapters 39 through 44, with the whole story of Gedaliah ben Achikam and what happened to those who remained. Now Sefer Yirmiyahu is going to continue and go into very minute detail about all the gold and the silver, especially the copper, that was plundered by the Babylonians when they ransacked the city. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Betamudei hanachoshet asher lebeit Adonai, betamchonot betyam hanachoshet asher bebeit Adonai, shibru chazdim, vaisu et kol nechushtam bavela. The big copper columns that were in the Beit HaMikdash, and not only the columns, also the mechonot, the stands, betyam hanachoshet, what's called the Yam Shel Shlomo, the big kior, the big laver that he built for the Kohanim to wash their hands, standing on 12 copper cows, all these structures, and they carry all the copper to Bavel. Not only these big structures, also the small items, v'tasirot, v'tayayim, v'tamzamrot, v'tamizorkot, v'takapot, et kol klei nechoshet asher yishartu behem lakachu. All the different small copper utensils that were in the Beit HaMikdash, they plundered those as well. That included the pails, and the scrapers, the snuffers, the sprinkling bowls, the ladles. All these copper utensils were taken. Now that we've finished describing the copper utensils, we're going to talk about the utensils made out of gold and silver. Pasuk Yotet, v'tasipim, v'tamachtot, v'tamizorkot, v'tasirot, v'tamnorot, v'takapot, v'tamanakiyot, asher zahav zahav, asher kesef kasef, lekach rav tabachim, the similar utensils, but these ones made out of silver and gold, those also were plundered by the Babylonians. In Pasuk Chaf, we're going to get a description of all the big kelim that were taken. Hamudim Shnaim, the two big pillars, Hayam Echad, the big tank or basin known as the Yam Shel Shlomo, v'habakar, Shnei Masar, Nechoshet, asher tachat hamechonot, and the 12 big oxen made out of copper that were holding up this tank of water, asher asah melech Shlomo lebeit Adonai, that yam that was built by Shlomo, known as the Yam Shel Shlomo, built for the Beit HaMikdash, lo yam mishkal nechushtam kol hakelim ha'ele. There was so much copper, they weren't even able to weigh the amount of copper that was taken. In Pasuk Chaf Aleph, we're going to describe how big these copper pillars were. V'hamudim, these pillars, Shmona esrei ama komat ha'amud ha'echad, v'chut 12 ama yisubenu. The height of each of these pillars was 18 amot, which is about 30 feet tall, or about 10 meters. It's about 3 or 4 stories high. And the circumference of each of these pillars was 12 amot. V'chut 12 ama yisubenu, a line 12 amot would go around it, meaning the circumference of each column was 12 amot. Divide that by pi and you can figure out the diameter. V'ovyo arba etzbot nevuv. And the thickness of that copper was 4 etzbaot, or about 2 inches. Navuv meaning it was hollow. Obviously, these amudim weren't totally nechoshet. They were hollow inside. However, the thickness of these columns was 4 etzbaot, 4 fingers in width. Pasuk habet, v'choteret alav nechoshet. Its capital was also made out of copper. V'komat ha'choteret echad 5 amot. The height of this capital itself was 5 amot. Usfacha, the mesh around it, v'rimonim, there were pomegranates made out of copper as well, as a design on top of this capital. Ala koteret saviv hakol nechoshet. Uche'ele lamur hasheni v'rimonim. The second amud as well had this beautiful capital, 5 amot high, the entire length, with a beautiful mesh of rimonim, of pomegranates. Vayua rimonim tishim v'shisha rucha. The rimonim, the pomegranates, made out of nechoshet, that could be seen. You could see 96 of them. Kol rimonim mea ala sfacha saviv. The total amount of rimonim was really 100. The back 4 you couldn't see. The ones you could see were 96. For some reason, Sefer Yirmiyahu goes into tremendous detail about all the nechoshet that was plundered by the Babylonians. It could be that this gives the reader a sense of the tremendous loss, not simply a monetary loss, but it gives you an idea of how beautiful the Beit HaMikdash once stood, and to appreciate the Chorban and the severity of its destruction. When you have a description of how beautiful it looked beforehand, that gives the reader a fuller sense of the tragedy of its destruction. Now, after talking about the different vessels that were taken, now we're going to talk about the different officials in Yerushalayim who were taken captive and then executed by the king as a sign that he had taken over Yerushalayim. After we describe which vessels were plundered and taken away, now we'll talk about what happened to the officials in the Beit HaMikdash, what the Babylonians did to them. Vaykach Rav Tabachim, Etzraya Kohen HaRosh, the general, referring to Nebuzaradan, he took the high priest, Sraya the Kohen HaRosh, and his deputy, Etzvania Kohen HaMishneh, the Shloshet Shomrei HaSaf, the 3 chief administrators of the Beit HaMikdash, and then in Pasach Hafei, Umin Ha'ir, from the city itself, not from the Mikdash, Lekach Saris Echad, Asher Hayab Pakid, Al Anshei HaMilchama, and from the people in the city, he took a Saris, a eunuch in charge of the army, the Shiva Nashim, Miroei Pnei HaMelech, Asher Nimtzu Be'er, and 7 important advisors to the king, who saw the face of the king. We had that wording in Megillat Esther, the 7 people who seemed to be the main advisors to the king, Vet Sofer Tzar Tzava, and the head scribe of the army, Hamatzviat Amaaretz, he was in charge of the people of the land to bring them to the army. The Shishim Ishmi Amaaretz, 60 people from the leaders of the land, probably from the landowners. Hanim Tsaim Betoch Ha'er, those important officials of the city, he took that entire group to the king in Rivla to have them executed. Pasach Havav, Daikachotam, Nebuzaradan Rab Tabachim, the general Nebuzaradan takes this group of people, Bayolechotam, Amelech Babel Rivlata, he exiles them to the king of Babel, sitting in Rivla, where the main base is. Pasach Havzayim, Bayakelotam Melech Babel, first Melech Babel hits all of them, Vaymitem b'Rivla b'Eretz Chamat. Then he executes them in the city of Rivla, in the land of Chamat. Vayigel Yehuda me'al admato, but thus Yehuda is exiled from its land. It seems like this was some official type of ceremony to show that this city was conquered by the king of Babel. We take the leaders of the city, the people behind the revolt, the king takes all of its leadership and executes them in an official ceremony. Now we're going to get a tally of the people who were exiled. Pasach Chavchet. B'zeh ha'am asher heglan Nebuchadrezzar. These are the people who Nebuchadrezzar exiled. Now it could be ha'am, meaning the important people. Not a total amount of people, but these are the important people who Nebuchadrezzar had exiled. Bishnat Sheva, first in the seventh year of his reign, the seventh year of the reign of Nebuchadrezzar, which would coincide with Galut Yehoyachin. Yehudim, 3,023. Yehudim here doesn't mean Jews, but it means members of the tribe of Yehuda, 3,023. In the parallel Psukim in Sefer Melachim, it talks about 10,000, and that would include the people of Israel. We called that many of the exiles had returned in the time of Yoshiel, and now, even though the center of the country is in Yehuda, we have people from all the Shvatim who have returned. So for the tribe of Yehuda, we have 3,000 some, and from the other tribes, another 7,000. Pasach Haftet, Bishnat Shmonesle Nebuchadrezzar, in the 18th year of Nebuchadrezzar, which is now the year of the Beit HaMikdash being destroyed, Mushalayim Nefesh Shmonamiot Ushloshim Ushnaim. From Yerushalayim he exiled 832. That's a relatively small number if that's the entire exile. It could be that was the first exile in the first wave, and later they'll take more. Or it could be these were the important people. It's rather unclear from these psukim, but we certainly have the impression that there were a lot more people left in Yerushalayim at the time of the exile. Pasuk Lamed is going to talk about an exile that happens about 5 years after the Churban. According to Chazal, it was 5 years later because that was after Bavel had captured the city of Tzor in Lebanon, which enabled him to come back to Yerushalayim and exile many of those who remained and still pose the threat that maybe they're going to revolt again. Pasuk Lamed, Bishnat Shalosh Vesrim de Nebuchadrezzar, in the 23rd year of Nebuchadrezzar, 5 years after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, Heglan Nebuzaradan Rav Tabachim Yehudim, Nebuzaradan exiles more members of the tribe of Yehuda, Nefesh Shvamot Varbaim V'chamisha, now he exiles 745, Kon Nefesh Arbat Alafim Sheshmot, the entire amount of Yehudim, most likely from the tribe of Yehuda, who were exiled, 4,600. Now the book of Yirmiyahu is going to end with a very short little epilogue, the same way the Sefer Melachim ends, where even though Am Yisrael was exiled to Babel, and even though the king has been put in jail, after the death of Nebuchadnezzar himself, and Evil Merodach takes over, one of the first things that Evil Merodach does as king is he raises the position of Yehoyachin, the king of Yehuda, and gives him a more important position in Babel itself. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Legalut Yehoyachin Melech Yehuda, 37 years after the exile of Yehoyachin, which is some 26 years after the Churban, B'Shneimasar Chodesh, B'Shneim V'Chamisha L'Chodesh, in the 12th month, on the 25th day of the month, the 25th of Adar, Nasa Evil Merodach Melech Bavel, B'Shnat Nachuto, Evil Merodach, the new king of Bavel, on the year that he became king, Et Rosh Yehoyachin Melech Yehuda, he lifted up the head of Yehoyachin, the king of Yehuda, he took him out of jail. He spoke good things to him. He put his chair above the chairs of the other kings that Bavel had taken captive, giving King Jehoiachin a higher position among those kings. He took off his jail uniform and was able to eat bread in front of him, meaning he supplied him with bread and food the rest of his life. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Baruchato, Aruchat Tamid Nitnalo, Meit Melech Bavel, Var Yom Biyomo, Ad Yomoto, Koye Mechayav. For the rest of his life, he gave him a proper meal on a regular basis, the meal coming from the king of Bavel. Basically, the king of Bavel decides to leave the king of Israel alive, symbolically giving some remnant of hope to the people of Israel. And just like the king of Bavel is giving food and leaving the king of Yehuda alive, so too the king of kings, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is going to keep Am Yisrael alive in Bavel and have them ready to return when the 7 years of Bavel will be over. This concludes our daily study of every parak in Sefer Yirmiyahu. It's been my privilege to have the opportunity to teach this. We're going to dedicate one more shir to Sefer Yirmiyahu, in which we're going to summarize its key points and make some observations about what we can learn from it, not only about the past, but also about the future. It's also very fitting that our study of Sefer Yirmiyahu and the beginning of our study of Sefer Yechezkel comes out this year at the beginning of the 3 weeks. Hopefully, our study, not only of Yirmiyahu, but also now of Yechezkel, will help us appreciate the reason why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, in the hope that by learning from those mistakes, we can improve our own behavior and become worthy that God can once again rebuild the Beit HaMikdash and return Yerushalayim to its proper position among the nations.